Hi, this is Brad Gillis from Night Ranger, and you're listening to Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me today in the Zoom room, he's a legend on the rock scene. He's been in the band Night Ranger. He's the linchpin for me of Night Ranger because he's been there for every album and every tour. He hasn't missed a show or an album. Please welcome guitarist Brad Gillis. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing fine, Pat. You know, it's just moving along every day in the situation we're in and making the best of it, my friend.
Now, who are you quarantining with, Brad? Who's at the home front with you?
I'm just here with my fiance. You know, she's working. She works in a safe environment. So I'm home working on music all day long and through the night. And I'm lucky enough to have a home studio to be able to hone my craft and get stuff done and create music.
Well, I can see the background we have behind me. I see a bunch of Marshall stacks, and I see some gold and platinum records, and I see some drums. So is this your music room? Is this where you create?
Yeah, I actually have my computer set up upstairs. Everything's up there with this beautiful view I have here in the Bay Area. But it's all run down to mics that go to the amps and to drums. And when I have drummers come in, we have a talkback system that record them with. And then, I put my amplifier up top next to me and run the speaker down here and blast it down here and record upstairs. So it's a great setup. I've been here for so many years and just got it down. I collect vintage guitars and amps. So basically, Pat, I can get any and every sound imaginable.
Well, that's good because you want that, especially when you're alone and you're doing this in quarantine. You need to get every sound possible.
Yes. Yeah. And also, I do a lot of music for TV, and sometimes they want song background music that sounds like this or that. So to put a 57 Strat through a 65 Deluxe Reverb, I can get some of those old vintage tones. And, I got, great old Les Pauls and, of course, Marshalls for that slam tone. But, everything's good here.
What TV shows have you done music for? Because a lot of you rockers do music for TV. I know Freddie Curry of Cinderella, that's his bread and butter right now. What shows have you worked on?
Well, I started out about 20 years ago. Actually, before that, I released, I put a couple songs in, I think it was the mid-90s. Night Ranger has done it throughout our career.
But sure.
Me personally, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, I had a couple songs on that.
Okay.
And then right around 2000, I met up with the people in ESPN. And in the past 20 years, I've done a couple hundred songs for them. And it's mainly aired on, SportsCenter. And when they acquired Monday Night Football, I was hearing a lot of my stuff on the apps going to commercial on Monday Night Football. But then I connected with Fox Sports, started doing a lot of music with them, and then Tiger Woods PlayStation games.
Wow!
Did all the music for two of those, and my last placement was just a little while back, a flamenco track on The Price is Right.
In this age of digital music, how do you keep track of what you're owed, or are you just paid a flat fee up front for stuff like this?
No, everything's recorded. Everything you do is recorded. And, these days you can't get away with cheating people out of money. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. The way they collect royalties now, it's pretty serious. So,
all right, good.
The good thing is I still see residuals and all this stuff, and which is great, with the Night Ranger royalties and Sound Exchange and all this other stuff out there. It's tough being at home and not touring because the income isn't coming in like it used to
right.
be, but I'm seeing great residuals from other factors from writing music.
Excellent. Cause normally right now you guys would either you probably doing shows or getting ready for some big summer shit. Well, no, we're in the summer. You'd be out on the road right now.
Well, Pat, I got to tell you, we had 45 shows with Sammy Hagar, Whitesnake, Night Ranger, amphitheaters all throughout the country and everything. Our last show with Night Ranger was March 15th. And after that, everything pretty much shut down. So we've been dead in the water for quite a few months now. So we would have had 95, 98 shows this year. And, you know, we got cut out pretty much most of all of it. But, you know, it's we're doing Sturgis a week from Monday, which is, you know, I'm not really looking forward to it in this scary environment.
Yeah.
But it's 10 days and bands every night. And they got us coming on Monday the 10th at Sturgis. And, you know, I worry more about flying than anything.
Sure.
The double-legged flight and drive to get to Sturgis and the drive back to the airport and the double-legged flight to get home. I worry about that the most. Basically, we're going to when we get into Sturgis, you know, no meet and greet, no sound check, get right on stage, do your deal. Back to the hotel, fly home. So
and this the Sturgis, these Sturgis shows, they haven't canceled this yet. They're still going to go ahead with it.
Yep, they're going ahead with it.
All right. Well, obviously, we wish you well, and you sound like you're pretty serious about this. So I know you're going to take all the precautions for yourself and stay safe. So,
I was a germaphobe before this even came down. You know, being a guitar player, I'd wash my hands 10 times a day anyway, just playing guitar and, you know, just going through airports. I never touch escalator handles.
Yeah.
I try to push buttons in elevators and going on trains to the airport. I use my knuckle and wipe it away, whatever. But
right. Your elbow, whatever you're going to use.
But, yeah. And have your, you know, your gel on you, disinfectant, whatever. But, that's you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to getting back to work. This has been almost 5 months.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah. It's too much in the life of a rock star to not be out there and doing shows. And you know, you want it to be safe for the people too, but we look forward to having you out there. I have to actually admit, and it's sad for me to say this. I've never seen Night Ranger live. It's just never.
Neither have I.
It's just.
I can never look at us. I've got to look out. Voila. That's. Oh, yeah, maybe someday. Now, where are you at?
I'm in Los Angeles, but it's just never happened. Like, it's like you guys are either out too far and I haven't been able to get out there. You guys don't seem to come to Los Angeles proper. You know what I mean? Or at least not when I was able to go. So I'm disappointed.
Well, last summertime, you were going to do that Sammy Hagar in Huntington Beach.
Yes.
On the beach gig. And we were looking forward to that because that's, you know, my daughter and a bunch of friends and different people, they're all coming to the show. And that got canceled because the promoter flaked out, I guess. So Sammy was pretty pissed about it.
I bet.
And he does it every year. But it got canceled. And that was our L.A. proper show.
That probably would have been the one I would have made it to. After this is all over, how do you think meet and greets are going to go down? You think you guys will still do them? Or, I mean, it's going to be a tricky process.
It all depends on a vaccine and a cure and where we're at. You know, right now they're all canceled.
Yeah.
You know, it's just where we're at, Pat. You know,
it is.
I can't call it, you know, and we're hoping that this whole Hagar Whitesnake Night Ranger tour could be put on. But, you know, to 2021 and still be able to go out and do it next year. So we don't know where we're at right now. No one knows.
Fingers crossed. Before we get into Night Ranger, I have to talk to you a little bit about Ozzy Osbourne.
There you go.
Because you were brought in to replace Randy Rhoads. I don't even know why you would take the gig. I mean, you have to replace this guy that is so iconic. And not because you can't do it chops-wise. You can do it. But was that difficult to step in?
It was probably the hardest thing I ever had to do, Pat. You know, back in 1981, Ozzy with Randy came to the Day in the Green in Oakland, big outdoor festival. And, you know, everybody was saying, hey, man, you got to go see this. You know, and I started hearing music on the radio and everybody was touting Randy Rhoads as the next Eddie Van Halen. And sure enough, you know, I had to go see him because listen to what I heard on the radio. And I was blown away. And I had this band back then called the Alameda All-Stars that I put together when Night Ranger was trying to get a record deal. We weren't playing out in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I had, you know, I always played a lot. So I put together a band just to keep myself busy playing a couple of the local clubs. And we're actually, you know, after I saw Randy in 81, we started doing a couple of the Aussie tunes. And then I remember driving up to this gig in the Oakland Hills called the Lucky Lion, this nightclub. And you'd jam with my friends. We had a blast doing all of the cool rock tunes from the 70s and stuff. Anyway, we were doing a couple of Aussie tunes and driving up there with my equipment. And I heard on the radio that there was a plane crash and Randy died, and along with a few other people that died in it. And I was blown away. I actually pulled over and thought, oh my gosh, my dad was a pilot. Mm-hmm. You know, he flew 20 years in the Navy and 20 years commercial. And, you know, just that being, and me, I flew with him all the time, and he had a private airplane license, and I'd fly with him. And just to hear that, it's like, geez, what really happened? And to find out that the pilot was like buzzing the bus and doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Just sad tragedy. So I, you know, I pulled back up with the Lucky Line and loaded in for the night. And I think it was about a week later when this friend of mine, this drummer named Preston Thrall, came up to me after we did a couple of Aussie tunes and took a break, and came up and said, hey man, I might be able to get you an audition with Ozzy. Are you into it? And I said, yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Right. You know, he goes, oh, let's see what I could do. Now, Preston Thrall's brother was Pat Thrall.
Pat Thrall. Okay.
Pat Thrall played with Pat Travers back in the day. And of course, Pat Travers' drummer back in the day was Tommy Aldridge, who was back then in 82 playing with Ozzy.
It's all coming together.
Sure enough, you know, Preston tells Pat, Pat tells Tommy, Tommy tells Sharon. So I think that was on a Friday night. And, you know, back then everybody was staying up kind of late and partying late. And, you know, it was the 80s. And I remember staying up real late that night and went to bed late. And in the morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call. It's like, oh, God, who's waking me up, you know? And I pick up the phone. I go, hello. And this lady goes, hello, Bradley. This is Sharon Arden, Ozzy Osbourne's manager. We'd like to fly you to New York to audition with the band. And I'm like, come on. I thought maybe Preston put the word right out and some chick was screwing with me. And she goes, no, Bradley, it's Sharon. Do you want me to put Ozzy on the phone? I said, yeah, put Ozzy on the phone.
Of course I do. Yes, Sharon, please.
This guy gets on and says, hello, Bradley. Yeah? And I thought whoever's doing this hoax on me, they're
good.
They're doing a good job. And he goes, I want you to get a pen and paper and write down these 18 songs to learn. Now, I still didn't believe it.
Right.
But back then, them being in New York and me being in the Bay Area, when my dad was a pilot, when he'd call from the East Coast, there was a slight delay in the phone.
Okay.
Which is no more. But back in the 80s, you hear the slight delay when you talk. And I heard that delay. You know that feeling when something major has happened to you and you don't know whether, you know, you don't know what to do? It's like, oh my God, is this for real?
Yeah, this is really happening.
It was really happening. And I'm like, oh my God. I said, Ozzy, you know, I know some of the Black Sabbath stuff, and I know a couple of your Randy, Ozzy Randy songs. He says, well, you'll learn them, right? I said, well, of course I will. So he gave me the 18 songs, and this is on a Sunday morning. And he says, well, we're going to fly you out on Tuesday. So I had that Sunday, you know, there's a couple Black Sabbath records I didn't, of course, records back then.
Yeah,
a couple
sure.
Black Sabbath records I didn't have. Of course, I had the Ozzy records. And I just started woodshedding Sunday and Monday, and later on Tuesdays when I flew out, and I didn't have it all together. And they knew that. So basically they had hired a man named Bernie Torme, guitar player from England, to came over just to keep the shows going until they found the replacement.
Okay.
So they flew me to New York, and I landed, you know, 11 o'clock at night, and there's a guy in a limo to pick me up. I was like, wow, limo, cool, right? He takes me to the Helmsley Palace in downtown Manhattan, right? Big, huge hotel there. And they were playing Madison Square Gardens with Bernie that night.
Unbelievable.
And which is a gig I would have, you know, every man's dream. I've still never played there. But so I went to the hotel, and I checked in. I said, you know, a reservation for Brad Gillis, the Ozzy Osbourne party, and there's, no, but we got nothing here. I said, Larry McNeeny, the road manager. No, we got nothing here. And I said, well, they're all staying here. Of course, they were under fictitious names, you know. And I said, I only had $150, Pat, in my pocket. No credit card. And I said, how much is the room? They said, $135. So I gave them $135. And I got my room, and I set my room. And I'm thinking, all right, I got a one-way ticket to New York. They didn't know, no reservation in my room. I hope they come through, you know. So sure enough, about 12:30 at night, I get a phone call from Larry McNeeny, the road manager. Said, oh, Bradley, you got in okay. He says, we're all up at the master suite on the top floor, you know.
Of course they are. Of course.
And meet Sharon and Ozzy. And I said, okay. And, you know, I remember punching the elevator and it was like way down below. It was like, it was slow. So I just took the stairs and pretty much ran up the stairs to the top floor and to their room. And sure enough, these two big, huge double doors leading to this big, huge suite. And there's all the music going on and people talking. And I thought, well, this is it, right? So I bang on the door and Larry, road manager, answers the door. Hey, Brad, you made it okay? Everything good? I said, yeah, yeah, I'm in okay. Just got to tell you, I had no reservation on my name and I had to pay $135 and I only got $15 in my name. And he pulls out his wallet and gives me five crisp $100 bills. He goes, will this work? And I said, getting better, Larry. Right.
Now, at this point in your career, when someone gives you five $100 bills, that's a lot of money to you, right? At this point?
Well, sure. I mean, of course. And the thing is, like I said, I had no credit card. And, mm-hmm. and you know, if things didn't work out, I mean, I hope they'd give me a ticket to fly home.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
I didn't know. I'm new. Pat, I'm totally new in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to add that to the story for the listeners to know. Sure. You're probably like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was definitely, it gave me a little relief, you know. And he goes, well, let's come meet Sharon and Ozzy. So we walk over. And I stopped Larry and there was like 50 people in the room.
Wow.
All, you know. And a bunch of younger guys, and I was 24 at the time, a bunch of guys kind of my age, long hair. And I said, Larry, how many of these guys are auditioning with Ozzy? He goes, oh no, it's just you, Brad. This, you know, he's a writer for this magazine. This, he's a photographer. So nobody else was, it was just me. And all of a sudden, I a little more pressure, right?
Yeah, see, that's a double-edged sword. You feel great about that, but then you're also like, oh, now I really have to be amazing.
Yeah, now I got to step up. You know? So Larry brings me to Sharon, and Larry goes, oh, this is Brad Gillis, just flew out from San Francisco. Oh, Bradley, nice to meet you. I'm glad you made it. Everything okay? And I didn't want to bring up the money thing.
Right, right.
I said, everything's fine. I'm in. She goes, let's come meet Ozzy. Ozzy's sitting on the couch, and he was a little bit out of there. You know, he was back then, he was drinking a lot, you know, just getting over everything with Randy. It was tough. I could understand. It was after the show. I don't even
know how after Randy passed that they didn't just cancel that tour. That's always amazing to me that they just kept going. Did they think maybe that if they stopped the tour, Ozzy might not recover? Did they need to keep the tour going to keep Ozzy in good spirits? I don't know. I don't know how to phrase it.
Yeah, Pat, I think they wanted to keep it going to you know, of course, every show was sold out. And the money was probably ridiculous they were making back then.
Sure.
And I think they figured, let's just get through this tour with whoever's going to replace them. Mm-hmm. And then when it's over, you know, Ozzy could take a break and reform figure out what he wants to do. So, you know, Ozzy looks up and I go, hi, Ozzy. And I shake his hand. He goes, go get your guitar.
Already out of the gate, he wants it.
Oh, yeah. I said, Ozzy, I brought my guitar, you know, my 62 Red Strat that I played throughout my career. And I said, I got to get out. I don't have it. I don't have an amp. He says, go get your guitar. I said, okay. So I ran downstairs, not the elevator, down the stairs, went and got my guitar, ran back up, went in. He goes, come up and play for me. Now, imagine this big, you know, huge suite with windows, you know, 20 feet high. Oh, with this view of downtown New York, beautiful suite, and the stairwell going up to the master suite. So we start walking up the stairs, me holding my guitar and Ozzy in front of me, and all of a sudden you can hear everybody get quiet. Right? And I look behind me and everybody's looking up, and, you know, like, all right, there's the big audition, right?
This sounds like in medieval times if you were summoned to the castle to perform for the king.
Yeah, and if you didn't, they'd behead you.
They'd behead you, yes.
You know? I mean, but anyway, you know, this was my shot, so with no amp. So we go up to the master suite, and I sit at the end of the bed, and Ozzy sits right in front of me on the floor and crosses his leg and looks up and says, what do you want to play? And I was doing, you know, back then I was, you know, doing a couple songs, but I'd learned Flying High Again.
Okay.
And the solo in Flying High Again, you know, it's got the great solo that Randy did, and it has that big tapping solo. Big tapping solo, which I knew. So imagine this. looking down at the end of the bed at Ozzy with his legs crossed. Ozzy looking up at you, and I'm going, dun, dun. And he's like, oh, no, oh, no. Here we go now. He's singing to me right
This is this has to be your out of body experience for you at this point.
I tell you, it was everything came so fast and so quick. I just I just started to whatever they throw at me, I'm gonna do my best.
Right.
So I got a crazy little feeling down, and he's singing to me, right, and then fly high again. He's singing on the plane, and then it gets to the solo, all this the solo in the last half is a tapping. So I got through the tapping thing. As soon as I finished the tapping thing, he grabs my arm and stands up and stands me up and says, gives me a big hug. Says, "Bradley, I love you. Pull me through."
Wow.
I was shaking, man.
Wow. Like,
I said, "Ozzy, I'll do everything I can to pull you through, man. I'm here for you," right?
Because those words, "pull me through," there's a ton of weight with those words. It's not just, yeah, it's not just get us through the tour. He's saying pull him through physically also as a person.
Everything going on.
Yeah.
Mentally, physically, the tour, basically, I hope you're the guy.
Yeah.
I said, "Ozzy, I'll do anything and everything I can to help you out." So he throws open the door, the bedroom door, looking down at everything. He says, "I found a new guitar player." And everybody starts clapping. And we walk downstairs and everybody's coming up to me, all these, magazine people and TV people. Everybody was there for the Madison Square Garden show, right?
Because you're virtually an unknown. You're an unknown commodity at this point.
Well, I had played with a band called Rubicon in the late 70s. We had a record deal on 20th Century Fox Records. And we put out two records and toured a little bit. But
now don't you
Rubicon did that big show March 18th, 1978, the Cal Jam 2.
Yes.
Speedway. Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, Hart, Dave Mason, Santana, all these great bands. And we were the only unknown band, but it was still the biggest day of my performing career.
Sure.
Because there was 400,000 people there at the show, and they put us on at the end after Aerosmith. There was probably 250,000 people when we played our Rubicon set. So that, and I was 20 years old, so I had experienced the biggest show I've ever played.
Right,
still
right.
To this day, right. So I did have a little experience, but people.
I wasn't selling you short. I just meant as a household name, or this is like the big deal.
Yeah, no, nobody knew.
Okay.
Me. I mean, we had a top 20 song, but never toured that much to really go to the next level with Rubicon. That's when and Jack Blades, our bass player now, Night Ranger, he was the bass player in Rubicon. So that's how we kind of got together. And then towards the end of Rubicon, Kelly Kagi, our Night Ranger drummer, joined, and Rubicon broke up, and then we moved on to form Ranger in 1980.
Gotcha.
Named yourself Ranger. But anyway, so people ask me in the suite, who are you? What have you done? I said, nothing. This band called Rubicon. I really didn't have much to say because I didn't have much to do with anything big. So basically what happened from there is we went on the road, and I would travel with the band on the bus, and we get in the morning to the next town, and Sharon got me a boombox, and they gave me a live board cassette tape of Randy from a month before. They actually gave me two of them, which you know, board tapes, you could hear everything clearly because it's not booming through the PA system and everything. You could hear every instrument pretty clear. And she bought me a little amplifier. So when I get to my room, all day long from when I woke up, you know, I didn't sleep much because it was a lot on my mind.
Right.
But I practice up until right before showtime. And then I go to the gig and hang at the soundboard while Bernie was playing guitar on stage with Ozzy. And with the sound man next to me, you know, I'm looking with my mouth wide open at this castle stage. And every night was sold out between 8,000 and 20,000 people, depending on where we were. And I'm just in awe. And the sound man looked at me. He goes, yep, you're next, right? Like, okay.
So let me ask this question. How is Bernie doing as the filling guitarist? Is he nailing it?
Well, he's kind of nailing it, but that wasn't his style. He was just kind of going through the motions.
Okay.
He really didn't have the rehearsal time that I had on my own in my room.
Okay.
To get it together, but you know, he was pulling it off, I should say.
Mm-hmm. What about as a performer? Does he have any stage presence, or is he just kind of hanging back and playing?
Well, kind of hanging back and playing. The thing with Ozzy, you know, even Rudy told me, you know, he says, when you're playing on stage, you stay back in your area. When you solo, you move up front. You do your solo. When you're done, you go back.
Okay.
That's how it was.
That's
Ozzy's
how it was.
Focal point. When you solo, you do your thing, then you're back. So that's what that was. Bernie was doing and just taking on everything, the explosions, the fire and the castle and just overwhelmed. So 4 days of that in my room practicing. On the fifth day, we were in Binghamton, New York, and I told everybody, I said, I think I'm ready. And believe me, I mean, luckily, Pat, I grew up playing by ear. I learned by ear. Any song that came on the radio, a friend of my brother's came over when I was 10 years old and said, Brad, just listen to the radio. Try to figure it out on the, you know, by ear. If you want to take lessons and learn by the book, you're going to be a different guitar player. And he says, you know, you learn by ear, all of a sudden you'll create your own solo styles. And then it's more, a more creative response than a book response, as I can put it. So I was able to listen to this tape and pretty much pick up where everything was at, you know, and just trying to learn the solos. I play the cassette over in the solo and I try to get it all down. And so I got to that night in Binghamton, New York, where I went and did my first sound check. Now, Pat, realize I'd never played with the band. I'm doing a sound check and then my first show. We only did 7 out of the 18 songs because of time restraints, trying to set me up and get me going.
Okay.
Ozzy never showed for the sound check.
Okay.
And then we did our first show that night. 8,000 people sold out in Binghamton, New York. We went through this. We before I went on, it was like, oh, yeah, you know, we all wear makeup. They put this, like, makeup on me and stuff. And I didn't have anything to wear. And they found me this, they had a white and a black Ferrari jumpsuits. Put on the white one. Ended up putting on the black one. That was cool. So I started wearing this Ferrari jumpsuit for the first couple of shows.
And you had the big hair back then.
Yeah, I had the big hair, blonde, curly hair, whatever. It was the look. But I got through the show. Oh, right before the show, Rudy goes, well, you know, I do this thing and you got to try to do it on stage too. I said, what's that? He goes, I raise my neck up and back and I go with the beat, especially on Over the Mountain, the first song.
Okay.
Going back and forth with your arm while you're playing this thing. And I'm looking, this is like an hour before the show, and I'm looking at my mirror in the dressing room trying to do this. Like 20 minutes later, I got it. So I was able to pull that off.
I can't imagine the pressure that you're going through right before that first show. I mean, my head's exploding just you telling me about it.
There was a lot of pressure, but you know, Rudy and Tommy and Don Airey, the keyboard player, they all just talked me up, Brad, you know, you're going to be fine. Just get through the first couple of shows. And, you know, sure enough, we're going through the set and everything's great. And we get to the song called Flying High Again, which is a ballad that Ozzy does. Mm-hmm. Halfway through the ballad, it starts kicking in, starts kicking in this fast thing. Well, I came in early. I was supposed to wait another verse and chorus before I came into it. And okay. I came in early. All of a sudden, I'm doing this grind, and I'm looking around. Everybody's hitting the slow thing. And I stopped playing, and everybody's down, down, down. And I went, oh, my God. And Ozzy looked over with me with this look of death, like, you screwed up. So I got my place. I got, you know, back in my place in the song. Then I finished out the whole set, and everything else turned out pretty good. I was really happy with it, but I did screw up.
And then you got some, did Sharon and Ozzy then give you accolades at the end of the first show?
Yeah, no, everybody, whole band, oh, Brad, you did great. And I said, I screwed up. You'll be fine. You know? So Sharon comes up right before the second show, getting ready to go on stage. And she's like, Bradley, you're doing a great job. But tonight, don't screw up, you know? And she walks away. It's like, okay.
And what we know about Sharon now is she probably meant that.
Oh, no, she meant that. I mean, she said it as a joke, but if, you know, nobody wants to screw up.
No.
You know, a big sold out Ozzy Osbourne concert. So I was able to do well the second night. And you know, little by little, I started getting more comfortable. But it was tough for me because the crowd were, arms crossed, a couple people flipping me off.
Yeah.
Signs, Randy Rose Lives, and just trying every, and Rudy said, just suck it up, man. Just play your heart out. And pretty soon, you'll get some love.
Yeah. Did you win? Later, go ahead.
2 weeks later into the tour, we do the King Biscuit Flower Hour nationwide broadcast, in Memphis, Tennessee. And it was live throughout the country. So it was nerve wracking for me, but luckily I had 2 weeks in, so I was pretty settled with my playing and my performance, but it was a radio show. And everybody back home, the old Night Ranger guys are listening at home. My family, all my friends are listening. Anybody and everybody I knew were like checking it out. And I had a really good show that night.
Excellent.
And I actually, the sound man, give me the board tape for that show. I still have it, but it was broadcast. So it's out in the airwaves anyway. But,
sure.
That changed everything because, now people heard me do a full show and the sound man did a great job and going over the radio nationwide sounded great. And then after that, I started getting love from the audience and people were like, well, Randy's passed. This is a new guy. Let's accept him and he's doing a good job. So we had a great run after that all over the country. Went to Japan, went to Europe. It was definitely, first class all the way, first class hotels. When we flew, first class transportation, otherwise, beautiful brand new buses. And it was a great scene for me. And I learned a lot and being thrown into this is an A team, set up here. Everything is first class, So I kind of got used to that.
Yeah. If you got through this Ozzy thing, you can get through anything. It feels like that was the biggest trial by fire maybe in your career. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yes. Oh, no. I mean, playing the Calajam 2 with Rubicon in front of, 250,000 people.
Quarter of a million's big. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd been playing with the band for a year and a half. I knew what I was doing. I had my show together and everything. And, this whole new ball game of playing Randy's riffs and trying to get my stage presence and just the whole big time scene, every night, 5 nights a week. It was cool. We went in, did the big show for MTV, at Irvine Meadows, which was the live broadcast that they did on MTV. And they recorded a VHS back then video that they sold. And they had, they had electronic laser bats going and sold out. And great lights and smoke, and that was recorded and sent out, and so that was right around my birthday, middle of June in 82. So that was a great accomplishment doing that. And then later on, Ozzy decided to do this live record
with the Sabbath songs.
Yeah, all Sabbath songs called "Speak to the Devil," and a lot of those songs we'd never played. So Rudy, Tommy, and I, and Ozzy and the crew. Went to SIR, that rehearsal place in New York, and sat in there for 4 or 5 days and learned all the Ozzy stuff. And then we did 2 nights at the Ritz for the recordings for the Speak of the Devil record.
Speak of the Devil.
and which came out good. I was pretty happy with that.
Is that in front of a live audience? Because there's always been rumors that that's more of a studio record. That's a straight up live album.
Straight up live. They're too nice there. They picked the best songs from each night for the record. Now,
gotcha.
There was absolutely no overdubs by the band. It was what happened that night. And Ozzy, well, it might have been a few.
And people can see tons of footage on YouTube of you playing on that Ozzy tour. And you look great. And in the videos I've watched, you look like you've been there the whole time. I mean, I feel like you look like you really fit in and playing great.
Well, yeah. I mean, probably after four or five shows, I really start settling in. And, you know, having that good 2 weeks before that King Biscuit Flower Hour in Memphis, really, you know, I was on my game by the time we did that. And, you know, like I said, we just trudged on. And Japan sold out, and Europe, well, all the European shows sold out. It was just amazing to be able to tour the world. And everything happens, Pat, everything happens so fast. It's so crazy. You know, it was a whirlwind.
I want to move on to Night Ranger now, but I do want one more question about this Ozzy period. Were you asked to stay on?
Well,
or were you like the transitional girlfriend? We couldn't keep the guy to replace Randy. He could only be there for a little bit. Then we'll get someone. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I got to tell you what happened, Pat. You know, we got towards the end. I think it was around November-ish, whatever. And everybody, the band crew, Ozzy, everybody was fried, you know, not only, you know, physically, but mentally from the passing of Randy. And it came about that Rudy came out to me and said, Brad, I'm leaving the band. You know, my band Quiet Riot just got a record deal. Sorry to say, man, I got to bow out. You know, there's so much going on. I need to get away from all this. And plus my band, we've been together for years and we got a big record deal and I'm going to make that choice and leave the band. So he left. Right. And so then Night Ranger gets an offer for a record deal.
Yeah.
With the stipulation that I come back to the band from my popularity playing with Ozzy. Mm-hmm. And after Rudy leaving, it hit me hard. It's like, wow. I mean, Rudy was my backbone in that band.
Yeah.
He's the guy I talked to, and I, you know, any issues or problems, I'd go straight to him, and he was just great. Rudy's such a great man. And for him to leave Ozzy, it's like, you know, who knows what's going to happen here. Here I got a band I've been together with for 2 years. Got this great demo, a record almost finished, and I thought, you know, and Ozzy, you know, he definitely needed a break, which they took a long break after the tour was over, and I thought I just can't sit. I'm going to roll the dice, man. I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to quit Ozzy, go to Night Ranger. These are my best buddies that I spent Night Ranger the two years getting this everything together. And I knew that we had some great songs, and I just rolled the dice. So I told Sharon, I said, man, I think I'm going to leave the band too. Ozzy, you know, he didn't care for Rudy or I leaving the band, and which created a lot of animosity there and just a weird vibe.
Yeah.
So I did it. I left, and sure enough, our record deal was done. The same week, Dawn Patrol, for Night Ranger's first record, and Speak of the Devil were released the same week, late 82. And I thought, wow, that's kind of cool.
Brad Gillis is everywhere.
I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. But the great thing for us, you know, we go jump right out of the box and like the start in 83, touring with Kiss, you know, big, huge tour when they took their makeup off and, you know, I had Vinnie Vincent on guitar with Kiss, but we shot right into an opening slot for the biggest band in the world.
Perfect. Kiss.
And right about then, MTV came out. We went in and recorded a video for Don't Tell Me You Love Me on the train tracks.
You move, it ain't the way that you move me. Oh no.
When you're making this video, do you feel silly or do you think this is the coolest thing ever?
Oh, I feel like an actor. I'm acting. Okay. Because not only were we playing live, we're sitting in the train, mm-hmm. and, you know, doing all this crazy stuff. But no, it was great because we never did a video with Ozzy. So this was my first ever video for Don't Tell Me You Love Me. And MTV 24/7 format, they didn't have enough content to fill 24/7. And just starting to put out videos.
Yeah.
So literally, they were playing us 25 times a day.
I saw it constantly.
Yeah. And which was great is because as far as the public and touring people, you know, people could see a face to the music. So people started recognize us when we come to town.
And Don't Tell Me You Love Me is a great fucking song. So that helps.
Yeah. No. It was perfect because radio was ready for something like that. And they, you know, radio played the crap out of it all over the country and it started taking off in Japan and Europe. And it climbed up the charts, and it was a beautiful thing. And then we did a video for Sing Me Away, the second single.
Sometimes I sit and I dream on for hours. Sometimes my hours, they turn to days. I dream of a girl I once knew. She was the one who could sing me away. But she is a long ways away, and I wanna be with her today. I think of a way I can get back. Oh, I run all the way back home. Sing me away, sing me away.
Which did got a lot of airplay, but it didn't really kill on the charts. Yeah. Didn't do that great. So basically, after touring for, I don't know, 6 or 8 months through late 83, the record company said, hey, we got to go in and do another record, man.
Let me ask you a couple questions about Dawn Patrol, first of all.
Sure.
Produced by a guy named Pat Glaser. Glasser. Okay, thank you. Yeah. I've never heard of him before, and I haven't seen his name on many records that I've purchased. What can you tell me about Pat Glasser?
Well, Pat was, he had produced a couple smaller projects, mm-hmm. but he believed in us.
Okay.
And he just loved us, believed in us. And he had a great engineer, John Van Ness, with a great studio. And they did a couple projects together before. And the studio image recording was unbelievable. And we believed in Pat because he believed in us.
Okay, great.
He was a great song man. He knew songs. He knew arrangements. And John Van Ness was the great sound guy to get a great sound out of you. So basically, Pat came in. We did the first couple of records with him, which are our three biggest records.
Yes.
And then he passed a couple of years later, like a
oh wow,
10 years later.
Okay, sorry to hear that. So
he did a couple of projects after. Nothing really noteworthy, but. But, you know, when you got somebody that's in the business that believes in you.
That's important. That's big.
You got to go with your heart, you know.
So the original members of Night Ranger are Brad Gillis, Jack Blades, Kelly Keegi. You guys are still there.
Yes.
Alan Fitzgerald and Jeff Watson.
Yes, that's all right. The original.
So that's the original five. Was Kelly always the ballad guy and Jack always the more rock guy? Because, I mean, I think we know Kelly is more singing the ballads, even though Jack will sing one, too. But was that how it was always set up or just how it turned out?
No, that's just how it turned out. They both sing ballads. They both sing rock songs. The thing, you know, was the songs that were chosen for singles.
Gotcha.
It turned out that, you know, Kelly sang more ballads and Jack sang more rock songs. It's just kind of how it is. But they both sang both.
Okay.
And of course, Kelly writing, you know, Kelly Keegi writing Sister Christian. Of course, he's going to sing it.
Sister Christian, oh, the time has come, and you know that you're the only one to say, okay, where you going, what you looking for,
crazy story about that, Pat, is we had written that song. That's one of the first songs we wrote back in 1980, trying to get the record deal. But we didn't record it, but we had the demo, and the record company decided to hold off on Sister Christian for the second sophomore record because they didn't want us to have these sophomore jinx. Okay. That meaning you put out one great record, you put out something else, and it doesn't even compare to the first
right.
record.
And you did not have a sophomore slump because Midnight Madness goes yep. platinum. It's a big record for you guys.
Yeah, I think it's up to triple platinum now.
Yeah, but back in the day.
But yeah, but back in the day. But actually, you know, then Jack and I wrote the song called "You Could Still Rock in America." So we came out with a bang on the second record, Midnight Madness, with You Could Still Rock in America.
And who sings background vocals on that song?
Rock in America?
Yeah.
Oh, everybody, the band and who came in?
A couple other people. Glenn Hughes?
Glenn Hughes came in and sang the high parts. He sang all the high parts, which I sing live. That's why it sounds so true to form, because Glenn's got such a great voice.
Yeah.
In America! Great.
And that's co-written by you and Jack.
Yeah, Jack and I wrote that
excellent
song. So we did the video on that and did great. And then, God, we were out touring with ZZ Top, Cheap Trick, all these great bands. And then we released this little ballad called Sister Christian. And here we're out on the road. The song's like all over, maybe too much on the radio, Pat. They just saturated the radio with Sister Christian.
Now, a song like Sister Christian, do you start seeing more girls show up the shows?
Oh yeah. Oh yes, Pat. They did show.
Yeah.
they showed a lot, believe you me.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. So 1984 was an awful fun year for me. but it was great because it climbed up the charts, started doing great. Then the record company came back and management, everybody said, we're gonna take a little break and we're gonna gear up to start headlining. So we've already had, the two big hits, Don't Tell Me Love Me and Rock in America out, and then Sister Christian. So they want us to headline. So I remember coming back, we kind of designed the stage setup and got all these buses together, equipment, and we started our tour. And I think our first stop in late 83, whatever it was, I can't remember exactly, maybe late 83, we pulled into La Crosse, Wisconsin, the Coliseum there. And I'm pulling up in our bus right before soundcheck and looking up at the marquee. It says, tonight, Night Ranger sold out.
Wow.
Which was like 6,800 people, whatever it was. So that was a pinnacle of our career. Our first sold out headline show with Night Ranger. Then from then on throughout the 80s, we just kicked butt everywhere, and sold out. And maybe we were doing 15,000-18,000 seats in certain areas, big cities. But we had a great run.
Yeah, because you also have When You Close Your Eyes on this album goes to number 14.
Do you close your eyes and dream about me? A girl in love with a gleam in your eye. I'm a young boy all dressed in white. We're older now, I bet you still think about me.
Yep, that was another big hit. And, you know, then we had Goodbye, another ballad, and, you know, and, you know, Sentimental Street. And
so you're walking out on Sentimental Street. What you doing out there? Who you trying to be? I know what you're thinking, cause I've been there myself. I've been kicked so many times, I don't know nothing else. Still, I noticed you.
But that was the issue that we had. The record company was so involved with us having such a big ballad hit.
Yeah.
That's all they wanted to release, you know, ballad after ballad mm-hmm. after ballad. And now on like the fifth record or something, in like the 88 or whatever it was, we said, you know what, we're not even going to put a ballad on the record. And MCA said, where's your ballad? And we said, well, we want to rock. We want to be a rock band.
Yeah, we have enough ballads.
Yeah, you know, you have your success with ballads, you know. Okay. So they gave us songs to choose from that other people had written. And we ended up with doing the song called I Did It For Love.
Every night that I held you made heaven from hell, yeah. I did it for love. Like the change of the season, you grew cold for that reason. I did it for love. And when it all went wrong, and there's no use hanging on, I turned and walked away. I did it for love. Now
and that pretty much put the nail in the coffin there. I mean, all the rock fans stopped coming. You know, the women were still coming, but, you know, we could see our scene dwindling, our audience dwindling. And, you know, we were doing 250 shows a year and you know, like 9 months touring, and the other 3 months we'd take a week off and go right in the studio and do another record. There was no rest for us. And about 89, we were all fried and we decided to take a break. And that's when Jack, you know, late 89, went and did Tommy Shaw, Ted Nugent did the Damn Yankees, and I went and did a solo record.
You did Gil Rock Ranch.
Yeah. Met Greg Allman. He sang a couple songs on it. The rest were instrumentals. Derek Sherinian on keyboards and me on guitar. And,
I love Monster Breath. That song kicks ass. And you self-produced this too.
Yeah, I did in my home studio back not too far from where I'm living now. But a lot of the same equipment as far as amps and stuff. But of course, you know, everything's digital recording now.
Now, Brad, so. you flew through these albums. You didn't even let me take a breath and ask you some detailed questions about some of these 80s albums. But I do want to ask this. When you started and you had and you had two guitarists. You guys were both lead players.
Yeah.
Were you going for like a Thin Lizzy type thing? Is that what, did you want that two guitar attack?
Yes. You know, that was the whole inception of the band. And that was Fitz's idea, you know, because it was Jack and me and Kelly getting together. And Jack was roommates with Fitz, our keyboard player at that time. Mm-hmm. Now, Fitz had played bass guitar for Montrose and played keyboards with Sammy Hagar on the Musical Chairs records. Right. So Fitz pretty much knew everybody. And, you know, when we started the band, he said, man, I know this hotshot guitar player named Jeff Watson from Sacramento, California, and a whole different style from you, Brad. You know, if we get together and do like a Thin Lizzy Allman Brother thing, you know, and I wasn't into that. I thought, you know, really, you know, and they said, well, at least meet the guy, you know. Oh, I meet the guy. So Jeff shows up and we're fiddling around and a whole different style than me. He played that Shanker type, just speedster, you know, licks. And I played with my, you know, more fluid, bluesy, whammy bar stuff. And but when we got together to do harmonies, we were two peas in a pod, man. We had that together. So, you know, hanging out with Jeff, just hanging out with him after just getting together and rehearsing. Yeah. And, you know, I love the guy, was great. He was, him and I were on the same have fun state of mind, right?
So,
you know. And both blonde hair guys and rocker guys. And so we decided to go for it. And, you know, as far as we came to divvying out the solos.
That was my next question. Like,
I knew it was, Pat.
Because you guys continue with to have the two guitar attack with Joel Hoekstra and Carrie Kelly. You guys still continue this. How do you decide? And you do a lot of the songwriting, especially on the recent albums. It's almost like you guys are favored nations. It's like you, Jack, and Kelly are writing, getting credit for all the songs. So I would feel like if you were writing the songs, you would always want the solo. How do you decide?
No, that's, I'm not that way, you know? I mean, as long as I mm-hmm. get what I'm trying to portray on record.
Gotcha.
On the key songs that I fit, seem to fit my style, then I'm happy. You know, Joel Hoekstra, great player, still a great friend of mine. We had a great time passing on, you doing solos and harmonies together. But, you know, there'd be a song. It's like, you know, Joel will go, Brad, this is you. This is your style. You know, and another song, I go, Joel, this is you. And then there'd be a song where I go, I want to do this one. And Joel go, I want to do this one. and Jack will come in and say, why don't you both do it? So it'd be the same thing as in, you know, Don't Tell Me You Love Me. I take the first solo, he take the second or whatever, you know, or we do harmonies together or both in a song. We always tried to keep the same format, Night Ranger format, that brought us to where we're at, which is big three-part harmonies that, you know, that the sing-along harmonies and the dual guitars. In our format since day one.
What's best for the band, not what's best for Brad or Joel or Karen, you know, whoever the other guitarist is. And I like that because that's how you have success.
Yeah, no, you got to be able to work with other people and not, you know, I mean, that's why we're still together, man. You got somebody with a big ego that tries to take over stuff, then all of a sudden you got issues. And we've never had that. Always kept everybody in check. Somebody starts getting a little out there, we reel them back in. No. And that's why I've been together with Jack since 1976. Yes.
But
what is that? Like 14 years? Yeah, yes.
Now, but can I ask about feeding off the mojo?
Yes, you can.
Okay, so in 1995, you and Kelly record an album under Night Ranger. I never heard this album until this week preparing for this episode. And
what do you think of it?
I think it's a pretty great album. And, you know, before I listened, I thought that it wasn't going to be. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I just felt like
it's not Night Ranger. It doesn't have Jack Blades in it.
It doesn't have Jack Blades in it. And then you guys later have an album called Seven, but that's really your eighth album, but it's the seventh one with Jack. So it's kind of like the forgotten stepchild in the Night Ranger catalog. But
yes.
And why did you decide to do an album without you? Jack was doing his stuff, and were you just getting restless, so you decided to do an album with Kelly?
Well, I had, you know, I'd finished my Gil Rock Ranch record, and you know, I was lucky enough to have Greg Allman come in and sing two songs. Yeah. And actually, there was one called Honest to God. It was a top 20 rock hit, and it was all over the radio. And then once that record was done, I was talking to Kelly, and Kelly's like, God, you know, Jack's doing the damn Yankees. You know, let's get another bass player singer and let's just, you know, keep Night Ranger going. So that's when we started auditioning people down in L.A. We'd audition like 20 people. Mm-hmm. And right towards the end, this guy walks in named Gary Moon, flowing black hair, good looking chiseled face guy, wore this cowboy hat.
Yep, he looks good.
Oh man, a rock star look at his peak, at his finest. And, you know, so we decided to go and do a record, and it turned out real good. And Gary just has this fabulous voice, and, you know, it's just me on guitar, and I was able to, you know, take over the whole reins on guitar. Yeah.
It's like a power trio.
Yeah. And I thought it was a great record. Of course, you got to realize, Pat, that's when music changed.
Yes.
That's when Nirvana came out and all those, the grunge stuff came out and was, you know, killing rock and roll.
But I just want to mention a few songs. Precious Time is excellent. The Night Has a Way, So Far Gone. I mean, these are killer tracks.
Yes, they're killer tracks.
Did you ever think that maybe just Kelly would sing the whole album? Was that ever a thing? Maybe he's
No. The thing was to bring Gary, would bring this other great singer in and do the same format as Night Ranger, have two great singers. And also I sing, Kelly sings, and you get a third guy in there, then all of a sudden you can recreate those three-part Night Ranger harmonies that we're known for from the 80s. So we found this guy with a fabulous voice, Gary Moon, fabulous voice, and did this record feeding off the mojo. We toured a little bit, but like I said, music had changed.
Right.
And, you know, things were kind of what they were back then.
Yeah.
Then things got stale. Mm-hmm. Japan came in with an offer for us saying, if you put the original band back together, late 95, 96, if you put the original band back together and we have a tour for you in Japan and a record deal lined up, are you guys interested? And Jack had left the damn Yankees, and the Night Ranger thing with Gary Moon was pretty stale back then. We said, sure. Let's try this.
So the five original guys come back and you get Ron Nevison to produce.
Yep.
And
we had all the puzzle pieces together to for a comeback.
Yeah. And you're on Sony Legacy, so it's like a major label.
Yeah.
This is my favorite Night Ranger album. Neverland.
Oh, Neverland.
The one that you guys do with Ron Nevison.
Queen of Neverland.
that's a great record. That's some wow. You know, I haven't heard these records for a while.
I bet.
But thinking back to Neverland, that was a great record, and we had a few great records, at least some great songs on each record since. But you know, we're still putting out records every two and a half years.
Yeah,
so
you guys are on a strong cycle here. I want to ask what working with Ron Nevison was like. What does he bring to the table? I mean, you worked with a ton of producers, but Ron Nevison has like a pedigree of working with everyone. You know,
yes.
He's
a song man. He is a song man.
Okay.
And he was really able to come in and hone these ideas we had and take them to the next level. And that's kind of what you need. You know, I mean, if we would have had Ron Nevison, our first couple records, you know, who knows how far we would have taken us. We would have got up to Journey Def Leppard level, possibly. I mean, could have, would have, should have.
The tone, if she wanted the world to keep spinning around, she'd pick a piece of my heart up off of the ground. I'd whisper her name in the still of the night, and while I'm dreaming of her holding me tight, she'd be changing her mind, packing her clothes. She'd buy a one-way ticket that would bring her
But working with Ron was great. That just the timing wasn't right. I mean, you know, I mean, we started touring after we released the record, after going to Japan and coming back. And, you know, they had us booked for low dough doing these larger nightclubs and stuff. And, you know, you got to realize Night Ranger was a band used to playing arenas. You know, we were an arena rock band. So we kind of just had to bite the bullet for the first couple of years. And I won't mention the booking agent we had back then, but it came to a point after around 2000-ish, after 5 or 6 years touring and not doing so well, you know, one of the agents from our booking agent came to our show right towards the end of the year, and we played somewhere in Nashville. After the show, talking to the agent, saying, "Hey, man," I said, "Hey, man, how are we looking for the next year?" I mean, he goes, "You know, kind of what it is, Brad. You know, probably do 30, maybe 40 shows." And I go, "All right, thanks." And I walked over to Jack. I go, this ain't right, man.
This isn't happening. Yeah.
This, you know, there's something wrong here. This band is better than 30, 40 shows a year at low dough. So Jack said, "Hey, man, I know somebody at William Morris Agency. We should bring him to a show." I said, "Yeah, bring him to a show." This guy came to the show, absolutely loved us. Said, "Man, I'll get you guys at least 50 shows. Raise your money up." So we ended up leaving the other agency, went with William Morris Agency. Boom, whole new level. Next thing you know, we're doing 50, 60 shows a year, playing with all these great bands. And then that kind of got stale. So just like it's only been 2 years now, we decided to go with CAA after we did a show with Styx, and Rod Essex, one of the main guys in CAA, saw us play, and he was there representing Styx. And said, "Hey, let me talk to you guys." And he says, "Man, we got to get you over to CAA. All the bands we got, man, we can put you out with you know, the Arios and the Styx and Sammy Hagar's, all these great bands."
Yeah.
Next thing you know, our money went up more, and we're doing all these, you know, tours and stuff with all these bands that are within our agency, CAA.
Yeah, I feel like from like 2007 on, you guys have really been thriving. You've been recording tons of new music and always out there on the road with these package tours, which is great because you get to hang out with guys you've known forever throughout your careers. You guys have crossed paths, and now you're on tour with these people, and you get in front of a lot of people because a package tour brings in bigger audiences, and it's great for the fans. So, and it must be great for you guys too.
Yeah. I tell you, you put together three or four big bands from the 80s, you know, you're guaranteed, you know, 8,000 to 20,000 people. I think it was we did 65 shows with Journey and Foreigner in 2011. And I think the biggest show we played was 23,000 in Chicago. And, you know, we only played 35 minutes opening the show. But I tell you, man, it's just like being in the big band. And you know your band is done okay in the past when 80 to 90% of the audience is in there when you open the show. And by the end of the show, you got 90, 95% of the audience. And that's you know, they're there to see us too, which is a great feeling.
Well, and you guys have a solid catalog of FM and AM hits. So you play all those, and then you can work in some new songs.
We try to stay away from doing too many new tunes because it's kind of like, you know, you're in the headlights for a lot of people. You got your diehards. But what we do, we bring in a lot of the B-cuts that we always thought were great. The Rumors in the Air, A Touch of Madness. Songs that we like ourselves that we're on our big records, I should say.
But here's the thing, Brad. You guys are still you've made new studio albums in 2007, 2011, 2014, and 2017. You've also released a live album within that time period.
Yep.
You're making and creating and writing new music. Is it disappointing when you can't play some of those in your set? I mean, I'm a guy. I want to hear new music from my favorite artists.
Right.
How do you feel when you make a full album and you guys have been killing it? I think some of this newer music is fantastic.
Yeah, well, we try to throw, you know, when we put out a record, we'll probably throw two, maybe three into a headlining set where we're able to do, you know, 15, 18 songs or whatever. But you can tell by the reaction of the audience whether it's viable or not.
And
you know, when people when people get off on it, you know, it's cool. And what we do a lot is we start the set off with like maybe one of the new up-tempo tunes.
Gotcha. Get them, hook them in.
Hook them in. And, you know, let the sound get together. So after that, you're playing your bigger hits and you sound well. It always takes a song or two to get the sound together for any venue you play. But, we still do one or two off the off new records when we go out. But you got to realize, especially when you play like, you know, we do state fairs. And state fairs could be great because you get your audience and then you get everybody else there that maybe never even heard you. Of you, but they know there's a live concert going on.
Sure.
They come in and see you, and then you try to win over new fans, especially the younger kids. You know, they tell their friends. All of a sudden, you got all these new younger audience listeners that are in your stuff. So you know, you can't play too many new songs in that situation. So what we do, Pat, is we play a couple damn Yankee tunes. We play Crazy Train by Ozzy.
Gotcha.
And Kerry Kelly, our newest guitar player, played with Alice Cooper for 8 years. So we do an Alice Cooper tune, School's Out, you know? And we throw those song mega hits in there. And since we were part of those projects.
Right. It's fine to do it. It's not like you're doing cover songs. You're doing songs from artists
we were involved with.
It's perfect. Yeah. That's fantastic. So
doing the couple Yankees tunes and doing, you know, Alice and Ozzy along with our hits and a couple B cuts, maybe one tune off the last record. We got a full set. And believe me, anybody that's never seen the band, they'll know most of these songs. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Unless you're a young kid, and you never heard of anything, but you're gonna know Alice and Ozzy. That's for sure.
If you've been near a radio in the past 38 years, you're going to know some songs from a Night Ranger set. For sure.
Yeah. If you listen to classic rock radio.
Does it feel like 38 years to you, or does it just seem like yesterday that the guys got together and started to do this?
It feels like 38 years. My back is killing me.
You look fantastic. I don't know what you're doing, but you look fit The hair looks great. Everything's working. You still got the rock star thing going.
I'm well preserved from the 80s, Pat. I'm well preserved from the 80s. I got to keep myself up. You know, mm-hmm. I watch my diet. I work out. You know, I lift all the time. When we'd be on the road, I swim every day at the hotel. Nice. I love swimming, man. That just blows everything out. And of course, my hour and a half on stage running around. But you know, being sheltered at home for so many months, I'm still lifting and working out. You know, doing whatever I can to stay in shape and watching my diet. But it's tough, you know, because I like my beers here and there, my little Baca OJ on the weekends, you know. But I don't overdo it, and I'm very focused on music and stuff, and which Great. Keeps you alert and going, you know. I swear, if I didn't have the studio or things going on, I'd be pulling my hair out. Well, I pulled some of it out, but I, you know, I have good genes in the family.
Good.
You know? My mom was Miss USA, and
there you go. That helps.
I have a beautiful, gorgeous daughter that's just absolutely ravishing. Of course, the look skips the generation. My mom was gorgeous and my daughter's gorgeous. And then there's me. Right?
I think you're doing fine, Brad. So the most recent album is called Don't Let Up. That came out in 2017. Some of the songs I love on there are Somehow, Someway. Title track's amazing. And like I said earlier, you guys are all, it looks like you're writing songs now as committee. Is that how it's done? You're all getting credit on the songs because everyone has input. Yeah. I always wonder how songwriting works anyway. Like you bring a song in, but like, did you bring in the drum part and the bass part and everything? You know what I mean? Aren't those guys creating those sounds on the studio recordings?
Yeah, every song's different. Every situation's different. Mm-hmm. Every record's different. You know, back in the day, you know, we split the publishing, but then when Jack would come on with a song, he'd have all the songwriters. You know, if I came, you know, it was different back in the day. What we're doing now, since we don't have this big success and we don't want to nitpick with the new guys in the band.
Right.
We split everything with everybody. Basically, what we usually do is we get Kelly, Jack, and me in a room, and we slam down our ideas and record our basic ideas. Then we bring Eric Levy, our newest keyboard player, and Kerry Kelly on guitar. Then we bring them then in kind of after the fact to interject their thoughts and ideas for the record. But then sometimes, you know, Kerry would bring something in, or Eric, and we take their idea and work off of that. So right now we just want what are the best songs for the record. Mm-hmm. Of course, we always wanted that, but what we're doing is we're sharing with everybody and making it more palatable for everybody to consume.
And will there be new Night Ranger? Will there be another album? Are you guys just going to keep making albums because you love it?
We're working on the latest deal right now, and we're going to sign the contract here real soon. And then everybody having their own home studios, we just pass the ideas around. Everybody's something in, but I think we're going to start out maybe doing a Zoom call with Jack Kelly and me with the instruments and just and talking about and throwing down some ideas and pass them around. And I don't know. I mean, we haven't got that far yet.
Sure.
Basically, everybody needed this time off. You know, people were talking about saying, you know, when's the last time you guys had this much time off?
I know, right?
I can't remember. We never had that. I always had something else going on, or, you know, plus being shelters in place is a different story.
Yeah.
You know, we're hoping that everything's going to, you know, come to an end here real soon and we get back in touring. But, you know, I mean, I'm staying, I'm pretty much done with my solo record.
Great.
And that has our friend from Feeding Off the Mojo, Gary Moon, singing most of the record.
Look at that.
Absolutely amazing. I got him singing his butt off, and I did produce everything here, engineered, produced, mixed, mastered everything here at home. And I swear, man, Gary Moon is the best vocalist I've ever worked with. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great vocalists that are out there, but, you know, his girth on the ballad stuff he sings and the way he you know, he's not one of those wah singers, you know, which after a while, you know, I don't know. I don't really want to burn on that kind of voice, but he just knows how to bring it in naturally and sound current. Whatever that may be in this day and age of rock and roll, but I'm shopping this deal right now as we speak. Hopefully, going to get that out soon.
You kind of tricked me then, Brad, because when I talked about Feeding Off the Mojo, you're like, what'd you think of it? What if I would have said, oh, I hated it. I hated that singer and I hated everything about it. And then you're just like, oh, well, he's on my next record.
Well, I still would have told you that because that's what I'm doing, Pat. And I got to like let you know what I'm doing. But
no, I know. And I appreciate it. And thank God that I did, because I would have been like, oh no, because I'm always honest. So, but I did love his voice, and I did think it's a great record. So I interrupted you. Keep going.
No. I'm a talker. I get me going on a subject, and I'll talk your ear off. But everything's good right now. I got Night Ranger starting new record.
Cool.
We're starting to do shows again. We're doing, like I said, Sturgis coming up on the 10th of August. And we have a drive-in show on the 22nd of August in Pittsburgh. So we're doing that. And then, you know, every gig after that is on a wait-and-see basis.
Yeah.
To see if the promoters still want to do it or if they're able to, or see what the virus is doing in that city. But, you know, I'm keeping myself busy. Plus, I've written 4 music-related TV shows. Basically I've been meeting with ABC and different production companies with these different ideas I have, and my new manager lady Raquel Bruno with Drive Entertainment
Group. Yes, thank you, Raquel, for setting this up.
We got together a couple months ago, and she's absolutely the most amazing person with so much energy, and her and me, get 2 of us together.
How many cappuccinos between you two?
We're like chatty Cathys. I have my coffee in the morning, but I'm just up, man. I'm up all day. I did a nice little workout. I got my blood flowing and everything. I'm all good. I got 2 other Zoom calls today too, so I'm on my game today. But
alrighty.
You know, I'm glad to be home working, Pat, and be able to stay busy. I've been playing a lot of guitar lately, getting my calluses up. I'm a big LinkedIn guy. I do a lot of great posts on LinkedIn. Check me out. I just posted a picture of me and my guitar is totally blackened out and sore from playing acoustic guitar for 5 hours this last weekend. But, you know, I'm trying to get my Instagram going up. I'm nowhere on Twitter, you know, on Facebook and stuff. Trying to get all that together because, you know, I kind of laid low on my social for a long time.
Right.
Just because I didn't want to deal with it. I dealt with people for so long. And then a couple of years, 4 or 5 years ago, someone said, man, go on LinkedIn, man. It's all professionals. You know, you can get in there and hook up with all these pros that are in your business, you know. So sure enough, I'm almost up to like 30,000 followers on LinkedIn, which is really a pretty amazing. And I'm able to connect with all the, you know, it's so great to connect with like CEOs of companies and all these big time people and whatever they do and that are big Night Ranger fans, and you'd never know it. Even some of these record company people that I'm hitting up. And,
they grew up with it, Brad. Of course.
And they've moved up to, you know, the vice presidents and presidents through these big companies, and they're big Night Ranger fans. And believe me, I parlay off those.
Yeah, that's a plus for you. They're going to want you to continue to succeed, and they're going to want to be in business with you. So that's excellent.
Yes. Yeah. So everything's good, Pat.
Well, Brad, thank you so much for giving me this time today. I really appreciate it. Continued success with the solo album with Gary Moon. You got a title for that? A working title?
No, but I tell you, we have this one song that's absolutely crazy fun, and the groove is infectious. It's called Sex and the Money. Basically, Gary sings it with this beautiful, crushing, high-end AC/DC type voice, And then my girl, my fiance Carmen, comes in and says, "Let me tell you all about it, honey. I do it for the sex and the money." And I go, "What?" Bang on the, "You shot me down." It's a great song. So
cool.
I don't know if I'm going to call it "Sex and the Money," but
that's one of the solid tracks that you can't wait for us to hear.
I already filmed a video on it, so that's what it was.
It's definitely
a contender.
You might be working more in lockdown than you ever have been. It seems like you are not just sitting around eating burritos and watching TV. You're doing stuff, and that's good.
No, I don't do much TV at all. I watch the news. I get depressed, and I start recording some sad ballad. What's cool, Pat, is I'm into so many different projects now. You know, I'd go on the road with Night Ranger, and we do, you know, we're kind of like weekend warriors. We sometimes play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, home on Sunday, whatever it is. But, you know, when I come home, I always need like a day just to recoup from being on the road those 3 or 4 days, just kind of lay around, take a day off. But then I get into the solo record. Now I'm home all the time, so I'm working on all these, you know, PowerPoint presentations for these music TV related shows that I'm doing. And finishing mixing and mastering my solo record. You know, I got together my music placement site. It's called musicalmansion.com. Every style imaginable I've done on there, from hard rock stuff that you hear on ESPN and Fox Sports, stuff like that, to flamenco, to pop ditties that would go on like a Target or Old Navy commercials. So trying to work that aspect to get more music out there. But
excellent.
Believe me, I have a hard time sleeping at night because I wake up, I think, oh, my God, I got so much to do today, but believe me, it's not a problem. I mean, I'm very fortunate and thank my lucky stars to be able to do what I'm doing at this, at 63 years old.
Well, let me thank a couple more people again. Raquel Bruno of Drive Entertainment Group. I want to also thank Jeff Frank for connecting me with her. I want to thank Dave Festini and Joe Reynolds for helping me with some research. And before we go, I'm gonna when this airs to everyone, when the audio airs, Brad, I'm gonna edit music in throughout. Anytime we talk about a song, boom, it'll be in there. So for a playout song, is there a Night Ranger song or any song that you've played on that you just get such a jolt from still after all this time? You're on stage and that song's coming up and you're super excited to play that one. Cause I would like to, whatever you say, that's going to be the play out song.
Well, you know, my favorite song has always been "Don't Tell Me You Love Me," you know, that's all right. Good. But there are songs like, you know, "Touch of Madness," you know, that I just love that song. It's just, you know, the whole chorus and everything and the double guitar harmonies in the middle and the crazy whammy bar at the end. And
let's do "Touch of Madness." That'll be our play out song.
There you go. "Rumors in the Air," that's another one. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of songs I like, but mainly, you know, the hits. You know what to play.
All right, cool. Well, thank you, Brad. Continue to stay safe, healthy, and well. Everyone follow us at Rock Solid Show on Twitter and go to rocksolidpodcast.com for all things about the show. Do you have a website currently, Brad?
Oh, yeah. You know, I got bradgillis.com. I got my Instagram, Brad Gillis Official.
There you go.
You know, but mainly, you know, musicalmansion.com. You can see anybody that wants to, you know, well, listen to what I'm doing and all these different styles. That's kind of cool to check out. Of course, that's my placement site that I'm trying to get placement on all this stuff. But,
all right.
You know, I just can't wait to release this solo record because it's been 20 years since I released a record.
It's about time.
And I've really focused a long time on songs and melodies and production on this record. And it's great to do everything. I did everything in my house. You know, great. I got a great drone sound through my Ludwig Burst recording set. And of course, I got every guitar and amp to get different sounds. But it's just exciting to have new projects coming out. So we'll see what happens with everything the next few months.
Excellent, Brad. Continued success with everything. When you do play your next LA show proper, I hope to say hello in person. So take care.
I'll take care of you on that one.
And look at that. I'm going to hold you
there
to
you
it.
Go.
All right.
There
take care,
go.
Brad. Thank you so much.
All right, Pat. Thank you, man.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.